to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood.
Hi, and welcome to North Florida Neighborhood. I'm Colby. And North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing what really sweet things they're doing with us and for us in our community that we get to call home. And today we get to chat with Bruce Fafard, probably the best last name I've ever said. But Bruce is the CEO for the Museum of Science and History. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Colby, and looking forward to it.
And for so many people, especially locals, we all know what the MOSH is, but for the select few of us that don't, can you unravel who y'all are?
Sure. Well, we are a museum that has been in the Jacksonville area for, quite a while, a long time. It's the early 60s, and we are here. On the South Bank right now, we've got several permanent exhibits. We've got the JEA Science Center. We've got Currents of Time. We have Health in Motion. But we also host a number of traveling exhibits. And right now, we're featuring an exhibit called Toytopia in partnership with Stage 9 Exhibits. And we've got here, come and see, the world's largest Etch-a-Sketch. We've got a full life-size dollhouse. We've got a 1980s arcade. So we really span everything from things for children to do to adults.
Yeah, everything that you just named, I am interested in. And legally, I am an adult. So that sounds so fun. My heart says otherwise,
really,
though.
No. It really is. And it fits quite in well to our mission, which is to inspire the joy of lifelong learning by bringing to life science and regional history. And we've learned certainly that play is sort of the foundation of that ability to learn and grow. And so that's why we brought this exhibit in, and we're excited to share it with the community.
And it's cool because the MOSH has provided, like you said, since the 60s, an opportunity for people to learn and grow. And now the MOSH is growing. You guys have just gotten some more property, and you guys have really big projects in the works. Can we get like a little insider scoop on what y'all's plan is?
Would love to. We're very excited. This past week, we announced that we are going to be building a brand new museum on the North Bank. We're very excited about that opportunity. We're working very collaboratively with the city of Jacksonville and DIA, but we also have generated a considerable amount of interest within the community. As you know, we've also recently announced some additional gifts to our capital campaign. We welcome the Mary Virginia Terry Foundation. She's a well-known philanthropist in our community, and we're very excited that she came forward to support those plans. We also, in addition to that, we had previously announced corporate donations from Vistar and PNC, and are in discussions with several other community leaders.
It's really encouraging because it sounds like your mission is to literally spread the joy of learning, and now you're going to be able to do that throughout our community. Is there a certain timeline you're trying to meet?
Yes, we're hoping, again, contingent upon the permitting and approval process. Our goal is to break ground sometime next year in 2021 and open the museum late 2024. One of the exciting things is with building a new museum at the North Bank location, we're going to be able to remain fully operational here at our existing location during the entire construction process. So we'll continue to be able to serve the community, develop educational programs, and bring in world-class traveling exhibits. So there's really, it really gives us sort of the best of both worlds.
Right. And in my mind, I see the MOSH and I go to it and I think, oh my gosh, what else could you even think of adding? Y'all already offer so many cool, fun things. So what's going to kind of be different with what's going to be happening at the North Bank location?
Well, certainly one of the opportunities we have with this new location is to actually introduce exhibits that will be outside that kids and families will be able to participate in interactively in an outdoor environment where we don't have that capability here today. We are also looking at some new exhibits that we'll be able to incorporate that will highlight the St. John's River and that ecosystem and how we interact with that. So we've got a lot of things that we're excited about to be able to introduce and to expand our current offering.
And it's cool that you're able to use the landscape that's given to you. You're not tearing it down, but rather you're incorporating it in your plans.
That is correct. We are going to be very conscious and very deliberate to ensure that we build resiliency into the project. In fact, we're hoping that we can be a showcase on how to actually build resiliency in.
And yeah, 2021, when you're trying to break ground, kind of seems far away. And even 2024, when you're hoping it's all said and done. Well, we definitely have that to look forward to. There's so much that the Mosh is offering for us and our kids right now. What kind of stuff is that?
Oh, so we have a number of exciting things going on. Certainly, Toytopia, the new traveling exhibit that we have. We have all our existing exhibits that we have converted to be touch-free in a lot of cases so that we ensure the degree of safety. We're very, very attentive to that, not only for the safety of our visitors, but also for our employees. In November, we're participating with Visit Jacksonville and have kids-free November, so a paying adult or guardian will be able to bring up to 5 children to visit the museum for free. We do ask, there's no coupon necessary, but we do ask that reservations be made online because we have timed ticketing in place in order to ensure that we control the number of visitors at any given point in time. And again, this is due to safety measures that we have in place. Masks are required for young children 6 and older and adults as well. You can view our operating hours at themosh.org. In addition, we run a number of special programs. For example, we have Mosh homeschool days where we bring the fun right to your student in a virtual environment. We do things such as building a robotic arm or 3D printing. We are also just started up a couple weeks back our Mosh Molecules program. And this is for early childhood program that provides learning experiences for some of our youngest guests, geared towards children ages 3, 4, and 5. And that is an in-person, its attendance is limited, again, with concerns for safety and to make sure that we provide a hands-on, very interactive environment. So those are just a few of the things that we have going on. In addition, every second Wednesday of the month, we have our Little Learners program, exclusively designed for early learning and development to encourage the growth of young minds. And we continue to add programs to enhance the learning experiences that we offer.
And it's cool because, yeah, you're enhancing learning experiences, but the core of this is fun. Like, you don't think about playing with all these toys as, oh my gosh, I have to go learn today, but you think of it as, oh my gosh, I get to go have fun today.
Exactly. And that's really key to everything we do, to understand how important play is in that process of learning and growing. And so we offer that in all our exhibits and all our programs.
Well, Bruce, what are some ways, like you mentioned the homeschool kind of organizations that you help host. How can people get on board with that and sign up and get further involved?
So you can access information, detailed information, times, dates, all through our website. If you go to www.themosh.org, and if you look under calendars and events, you can look at the monthly events, and that will detail each of these programs. It'll also provide you with information on how to sign up for the programs or how to reserve tickets to come in and actually visit us in person.
Well, the Mosh has a lot going on, but overall, what do you see y'all's end vision is? Because, I mean, we look to the left and to the right, and it seems like you guys are just adding so many different things that we get to be a part of. So what else is there for the Mosh?
So we're going to, as I said, we're going to continue to expand and grow with our programs. You know, the new museum is going to offer a lot of opportunity for us to be able to bring in some of the larger exhibits that, because of space constraints, today we're not able to. And so that's one of the exciting things that we're going to be looking at as we move forward with this. We work collaboratively, not only with homeschoolers, but also with the local school districts to make sure that all of our programs incorporate STEAM. And so they are allowing the students to learn these things in an interactive environment and complementary to the curriculum that's offered. We continue to do things for adults. For example, we have a whole program called Mosh After Dark, and we're looking for new opportunities to expand that. The other thing is we also, last year, we hosted our very first Maker Fair. We're planning another Maker Fair this coming spring, and that is something that's, you know, keep an eye out for the information we'll be releasing there. So there's a lot of opportunities for us to continue to engage and interact with the community and look for to not only expand, but also to increase our ability to fulfill our mission.
Bruce, thank you so much for choosing Jacksonville as your mission headquarters. So tell us one more time how we can get a hold of the Mosh and learn more and get those tickets reserved.
Sure, would love to. Just go to open up an internet browser and type in www.themosh.org, and you'll come to our website, and everything that you need to find out on how to visit us, what are some of the special programs that we have running, and even how to join or support us, you can find there on our homepage.
Well, great. Bruce, thank you so much for being such a sweet neighbor to your neighborhood.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Colby. I've enjoyed this.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week. And if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at Jacksonville.radio. Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood.
Hey, and welcome to North Florida Neighborhood. I'm Colby, and North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing what really cool stuff they're doing with us and for our community. And right now we get to talk to someone whose heart is truly for our neighbors, and more specifically the neighbors that don't have a neighborhood. We get to chat with Shannon Nasworth, the president and CEO of Ability Housing. Shannon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate this.
Shannon, Ability Housing, there just seems to be so much substance, and it's not a service level statement with that title and with that name. So can you kind of dive into who Ability Housing is?
Sure, I'd love to. So Ability Housing is a nonprofit based here in Jacksonville. We develop affordable rental housing. Right now we own 5 apartment communities in Jacksonville, as well as 29 single family rental homes. And because we do such a good job, we were also asked to expand to Central Florida. So we have 2 properties in operation in Orange County and a 3rd in construction in Osceola.
So, Shannon, when I hear the phrase affordable housing, I think, well, that's what a lot of apartment complexes call themselves, but you guys are really taking on that term affordable.
Yes. Affordable housing really just means housing people can afford. That is the definition, and the caliber of affordable depends on your household income. What we really focus on is people with extremely limited incomes, either persons with disabilities or the elderly who are on fixed incomes, working families earning minimum wage or slightly above, And then, of course, people who are homeless or at great risk of homelessness. Right now in Jacksonville, we set aside at least a portion of all of our units at all of our properties for people who are exiting homelessness. And it's a very rewarding thing to do, but it's incredibly hard to accomplish.
Okay, so how do you even begin to tackle that, the homelessness and people not having enough money to pay rent, even though they have a job? Where do you start?
Well, really, for us, the approach we take is twofold. First, we try to develop more housing that is affordable. So we secure financing from a myriad of sources. We are very reliant on government financing because we need to have money that it doesn't require repayment and debt. That's how we keep the rents lower. And then we also partner with service organizations around the community. We pay them to provide on-site wraparound services to the residents. So if a crisis arises, we can help them through that. We can also help them access benefits and health care and job development training and other things like that so that they can continue to improve their quality of life and stability. In addition to developing housing, we also have some grants where we master lease units in the community so that we can take formerly chronically homeless persons with disabilities and help them afford market rate units across the community. So it takes a lot of different strategies, and it's desperately needed, and we need to find ways to do more, but it's incredibly rewarding as well.
And I think it's really encouraging to hear that this isn't just a home for them, but you're also giving them resources so they can build up and move away, in a sense.
Yes. Our key measurement of success is housing stability. If a household remains stably housed for 12 months or longer, that's our goal. But stable housing doesn't necessarily mean staying with us. For many of our residents, after a couple of years, they can move on to other housing in the community, making that unit available to somebody else. As long as they leave our housing to other stable housing, that is the ultimate success. Our goal really is to make sure that when they leave, they're not at risk of returning to homelessness. Last year, across our entire portfolio, even with over half of the units being targeted to persons who are homeless, 96% of our residents retained stable housing, which is an incredible success record.
Congratulations on being asked to move over to Orlando and kind of expand in that area, but it sounds like there's not enough housing for the number of people that need homes. So is there a wait list to get on? How can people get with y'all?
Yeah, unfortunately, there is a wait list. The need far exceeds the demand. We're really focusing in a space that is dealing with complete market failure. That normally supply and demand, you know, you can, the more the demand, the greater the supply, but we're in an inverse situation. So our lists are long, but they can always go to our website, abilityhousing.org, and there's information on all of our properties there. That's the easiest way to get information on each property.
Okay, and just kind of get your name on the list in that sense. And now I want to transition, and another congratulations, you were just recently selected as Executive of the Year.
Yes, that was quite a surprise, and I have to say, I get the honor of being the one who gets the award, but it really was for the whole team. There is no way that I am the Executive of the Year without the team that I have around me. I am really blessed to have a great group of staff that I work with and a board of directors that is just a phenomenal great group of community volunteers.
Shannon, I don't even know what constitutes as winning that. So what? Why did y'all get chosen, and what's that award mean?
It's a national award, and it really is quite an endorsement, which is always wonderful to do. We don't do what we do for the recognition, but when you realize people are noticing, there is a sense of pleasure and reward with that. And really, it's a national organization that focuses on multifamily apartment development, and they recognize Ability Housing and myself as its executive for the quality of the housing we produce, the level of services we provide, and our impact in the communities that we're serving. It's really quite an honor, and I was very surprised when I got the notification.
I kind of just assumed it was a local award, but you're saying it's national. So what sets Ability Housing apart from all these others?
It really is the quality of what we do. Not that other people don't develop quality housing. I don't want to make it sound like that. But because we focus on homelessness, persons with disabilities, the hardest to serve from a financial standpoint with regards to housing, you know, most real estate developers do not focus on that. And that's what makes us special. Coupled with, you know, our long-term investment in the community, the degree to which we really try to transform communities as well as the lives of our residents, and again, the support services that we make sure are provided to all of our residents. that investment in the people and the community is what was being recognized.
And it sounds like, in short, quality and care goes a long way with what you're doing. And I mean, even in everyday life, quality and care.
Absolutely. You know, if people remember Maslow's hierarchy, food and shelter, absolute number one needs. Mm-hmm. And so what we can do is provide people with the stable housing. They know they have shelter. They, you know, then have that bridge to have a moment, end the crisis and the stress, assess and, you know, work with our support providers and figure out what the path to their goal is. Is it going back to school? Is it getting a certification? Is it helping your child get tutors in school so they're doing better? You know, whatever that family's goals are and the best way for them to achieve their stability, that's what our housing provides to them. And to a degree, that's really what was being recognized.
Again, I get the privilege of chatting with Shannon Nasworth, the president and CEO of Ability Housing. And again, congratulations on being selected as Executive of the Year. And while that is such a great accomplishment, y'all are still facing so many different challenges, especially all the challenges that the year 2020 brought. So what do we see into the final weeks of the year for Ability Housing?
Yes, I think everybody will agree 2020 has been very interesting, to say the least. And we've really been very lucky because, you know, even with all of the downturn and people losing jobs and things like that, we've been able to work with every one of our residents and help them make sure that they could retain their housing and find solutions if they did lose their job or have a reduction in income. And really, right now, that's what we're focusing on going forward, first and foremost, is making sure our current residents remain stably housed and that we help them through this very trying time that we're all going through. But we're also looking for new properties to develop. We have three properties in construction right now. One is in Jacksonville. We're helping another nonprofit. A second is in Osceola County. The first building will open before the end of the year, and the rest will be open in the beginning of next year. And then yesterday, I was in Pasco County at the ribbon cutting for one property we helped another nonprofit build. And we have a second project with them in Pasco County that is going to open in a few months as well. So the end of this year, we're really just focusing on our residents and getting the properties we have under construction, placed in service, leasing them up, and helping more people get into housing. And then next year is really going to be looking for more properties to develop because we've got to continue to increase the supply of quality housing. In the end, that's the solution to the challenge we're trying to address.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you guys are slowly addressing that. Like, 2021 is going to be a huge year. Boots on the ground, getting stuff done.
Absolutely. We really have to push forward very hard, really be aggressive. We need to figure out more and more ways to create more housing that is affordable to all of our neighbors.
Well, Shannon, what can your neighbors who are blessed enough and fortunate enough to have stability housing do for y'all?
Well, of course, we are a nonprofit. We always appreciate community donations. They go a long way, and that helps us, you know, identify sites or provide services to our residents in our current properties and a myriad of other things. So first and foremost, resources are needed and any support is appreciated. Everybody tackling this issue together. So figuring out ways they can get involved. Maybe they're a member of a congregation that can help create more affordable housing. Just try to figure out what role possibly you or those you work with or are associated with might play in this. And then, of course, hold our legislative bodies accountable. You know, we need our governments, local, state, and federal, to invest in affordable housing. So make sure they realize this is important to them.
Shannon, thank you so much for addressing this, but not just addressing it, but truly making a dent in something that seems too big for us to even handle.
It can seem overwhelming, but really any journey starts with the first step. And if we all just start working really hard together, we can make tremendous progress very quickly.
And Shannon, if we want to come out and serve and help and volunteer or even give you a monetary donation, is there a way to contact you or a website? How can we come and be good neighbors for Ability Housing?
We would love anyone who wants to help. The easiest way is either call the office, 904-359-9650, our website, abilityhousing.org, or they can email us at info@abilityhousing.org. We will get back to them quickly with any opportunities that might fit their desires on how they want to get involved.
Thank you so much for being so present and so active and building up our neighborhood.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week. And if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King, at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at jacksonville.radio.
They're not peanuts if they're not Davis Peanuts. Davis Peanuts has been in Jacksonville for 27 years, now with three locations. Original location at New Berlin and Heckscher Drive, in Callahan next to Vistar, and now at Lem Turner Road and Dunn Avenue near the meat market. Green Peanuts are now in season with great deals. Major credit cards accepted. Davis Peanuts, New Berlin and Heckscher, US 1 Callahan, and now at Dunn and Lem Turner. In-season produce at Heckscher.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for health care. And here's why. Not only is it time for open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also when you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. For the typical family, switching to MediShare saves about $500 a month, which is a game changer for a lot of people. Think what you could do with that. But if you join right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fee. So that's another $170 you'll save. And MediShare is really different. It's a community of Christians who share each other's healthcare bills. More than 400,000 people are members, and they've shared over $4 billion in medical bills. So, yes, they can handle your bills too. This may be the time to make the switch. Join before November 30th for the additional savings. It's so easy to find out more. They're great to talk to. In fact, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Here's the number. Call 844-55-BIBLE. That's 844-55-BIBLE, 844-55-BIBLE.
You have to be up in 5 hours, 2 hours, 6 minutes. And when you hear, you realize that you haven't slept a wink. That's why there's ZzzQuil Pure Zs, a drug-free blend of botanicals with an optimal dose of melatonin so you can fall asleep naturally with no next-day grogginess. It's available in both liquid and gummies, tastes great, and is non-habit-forming. Pick up ZzzQuil Pure Zs from the sleep experts at Vicks ZzzQuil. ZzzQuil Pure Zs, naturally superior sleep. Available at retailers near you.
You know when you give someone a gift that's so utterly thoughtful, so custom to them, they couldn't possibly think about parting with it? At Vistaprint, we specialize in unregiftable gifts. From custom mugs and canvas prints to calendars and holiday cards, everything you make at Vistaprint is sure to become something your loved ones will cherish. And right now, they're all up to 50% off. So visit Vistaprint.com/gift and save on your unregiftable gifts.
Black Friday savings continue through Monday at Ace. Visit acehardware.com to get your coupon for 15% off your entire purchase, in-store or online. Whether it goes under the tree or into a stocking, our best brands always make the best gifts. So bring in your list and save big with 15% off your entire purchase, in-store or online, Saturday through Monday. Must present coupon or redeem. Offer valid at participating stores and acehardware.com on regular priced items. Limit one. Exclusions apply.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Have you wanted to speak a new language but thought it would be too difficult? Then try Babbel. Babbel starts by teaching you words and phrases that gradually get more complex. Soon, you're practicing short conversations. So in 15 minutes a day, you'll be speaking a new language in a few weeks. Babbel is built around real life. It teaches you practical conversations that you will actually use. Babbel, language for life. Celebrating 10 million subscriptions sold. Now try Babbel for free. Just go to Babbel.com today. That's Babbel.com.
Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to our North Florida neighborhood.
Hi, and welcome to North Florida neighborhood. I'm Colby. And North Florida neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and getting to know what they're doing with us and for us. And a lot of us know and realize October as Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but it's also Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So today we get to chat with the CEO of the Hubbard House, Gail Patton. Gail, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Gail, can you kind of first unravel who the Hubbard House is?
Hubbard House is the Certified Domestic Violence Center serving Duval County and Baker County, and we provide a continuum of services to help victims of domestic violence and their family. So we have a 24-hour hotline, and that's usually the first place where people reach out for help. We also have a shelter, which is what people typically think of when they think of Hubbard House, is the emergency shelter for survivors to go when they're needing to flee their abusive relationship. But we also have more than that. We have an outreach center That's on Beach Boulevard. That's co-located with our thrift store, and people can walk in during regular business hours and get help, whether it's to just find out about their situation or get some crisis intervention. We're there for that. We also have advocates and attorneys at the courthouse who help people get injunctions for protection. We have support groups for children, and we have support groups for adults as well. We also go out into the community and talk about domestic violence just to various groups, to church groups, to civic groups, to workplaces, wherever somebody wants to learn more about domestic violence, how to identify it, how to get help, and how they can help. We're there to be able to provide that information. And then we also have a whole volunteer program, because people in this community are so generous that they give their money, they give their time, and we are only here because the community supports us. So we have volunteers who do many different things, from doing hands-on work with survivors to doing admin things. All of it is needed, and all of it is certainly appreciated.
It's cool, because it sounds like the Hubbard House is really a home base that not only, hey, we're going to help you get out of a really bad situation, but we're also going to provide you tools and resources to help you move on.
That's exactly it, Colby. We do an empowerment model, which means we're not here to tell anybody what they should do. Mm-hmm. They've had a relationship that has controlled just about everything about their life. But what we are here to do is to say, here are some options. What do you want to do for your future moving forward? Here are ways that we can help you. And if we can't help you, we can link you with somebody that can. We do career counseling here. We help people get into homes with rent assistance, in addition to regular counseling that we do with people, safety planning, very, very important that we do with people. And then also just helping them, what are your goals for your future? A lot of people have never asked them that question, at least not recently. And so it's helping them look for a future of hope rather than a future of fear. And that's what we're here for.
And I'm sure this is going to be a pretty broad question, because every situation is different and every situation needs to be handled differently. But what does it look like if I'm in an abusive relationship or an abusive home? If I call the Hubbard House, what do these steps look like moving forward for a caller?
So when a person first calls the hotline, and that usually is the first point of contact, they'll talk to a hotline counselor who will, first of all, just listen to them and believe them. And I can't tell you how life-affirming that can be, to have somebody devote their time to listen to a person and to believe the story that they're telling. And then as you begin to talk about your situation, our staff can begin to listen to and may ask questions to kind of help you look at, how lethal is this situation? Because unfortunately, people do die due to domestic violence. If we think about a few weeks ago, we had 2 fatal shootings due to domestic violence in 1 week. And so it's really important when you call to just be real and open with that person. You don't have to give your name, but you can tell them your details in all honesty, because we have worked with so many people and we can listen for those signs that might talk about how lethal your situation is and give you options. So we talk with the person, then we ask them, what is it that you want? For some people, they are like, I need to get out of this home. I feel if I stay, me and the children are going to be injured even more. I feel like my life is being threatened. And in those situations, we work with a person to get them into shelter. If we don't have space in our shelter, then we work with them to get them in one of our neighboring shelters until we do have space. For some people, they might not want to go to shelter, or they might not want to go to a neighboring shelter, so we safety plan with them. We help them look at every part of their life to figure out what is the safest way to move forward. Sometimes people think, oh, I'll just go to my mom's house, or I'll go to my best friend's house. Well, if the abuser knows your mom and your best friend, that may not be the safest place. In fact, that may be the first place they go looking for you. And so it not only leaves you in danger, it also puts them in danger. So coming into shelter may be the best thing. Some people may say, if I can just get out of state to visit my mother or somebody out of state where the abuser doesn't know, we can help them with those transportation costs to get them there. And so we look at what they want to do and how they want to move forward. And some people will call the hotline a couple of times before they even want to make an action, because they're trying to build trust with us, they're trying to understand what all their options are. They might not be at that point where they feel they can leave or are ready to leave. So we work with the person where they're at. Let's say a person decides to come into shelter. If they have their own transportation, then we tell them how to get here and they come into shelter. If they don't have their own transportation, we can help arrange a taxi to pick them up. When they come into shelter, they'll meet with a staff member one-on-one to just kind of understand what shelter life is about. They'll get a tour of the shelter. They'll be assigned a room. If they have children, their children will be in the same room with them. And we let them know, you know, where their kitchen is, where they can get food here. They don't have to bring their own food. We provide that. And if they have special dietary needs, all they need to do is let us know, and if we don't have the food, we'll go get it for them. And you're able to cook your own food for your own family, so you don't have to wait for us to cook, and we don't have a certain meal times. You can cook and eat whenever you want. And we just give them an overall orientation of what it's like to live in the shelter. And then within 24 hours, they'll meet with a counselor who will sit down with them and say, okay, this is a temporary shelter, because shelter is an emergency shelter, so it's usually 6 to 8 weeks. What do you want to accomplish while you're here for 6 to 8 weeks? For some people, it's, as I said earlier, getting to another state. For other people, it's, I need to stay here while injunction is served on my abuser to get him out of the house. And for others, they're like, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to live. I need to find a place to live that I can afford. And just as a side note, affordable housing is a huge, huge issue for survivors of domestic violence. If you look at the cost of rent, I mean, it's just astronomical. And so sometimes victims end up going back to their abusers because they have no way to live affordably in a home. So in addition to giving rent assistance to those people who are eligible, it's just something we as a community can do, is look at how can we help develop more affordable housing for people, because it impacts survivors, definitely. And without it, they can be trapped in an abusive situation, but it also impacts so many other people to have affordable housing, as we just hear in the news every day. So it's a really important issue we need to tackle as a community. And as they're here, they work on that plan with their counselor. And that plan may also include seeking legal help, whether it's getting an injunction or maybe a person's wanting to get a divorce. If they're not wanting to get a divorce, that's not our decision, and we don't tell people what they should do. That is their choice. But if that's what they want, we can help link them with an attorney. And people, during this time, if it's during the school year, we make sure the kids stay in school uninterrupted. They typically won't go to the school that they were at previously, just because the abusers always use the children as pawns, and the first place they're going to go to look for the children is at their usual school setting. So we have a different school opportunity for children. And what we have found, that children who go to school, when they come to live at Hubbard House, that they really begin to excel in school if they had fallen behind, because now they're not living with that constant threat over their head. The children aren't staying up all night hearing what's going on in the home and wondering if they're going to wake up to their mother being dead or alive. So it gives them an opportunity to catch up on school. And then also, we have counselors for children as well. What's going on with children? We even do developmental assessments with infants to see if they're where they need to be developmentally, because oftentimes in homes where there are abuse, kids don't develop at the same rate. And so then we work with the parent to develop a plan for the child based on what the parent feels best. And so I just can't emphasize that enough, that how we provide services is, we have all of these things. You can use all of them, or you can use none of them, because it is your choice of what you want to do for your future. And there will be times when people come into shelter for the first 2 weeks, they just need to rest and, you know, just kind of recoup and get their head on straight to figure out what they want to do. And that's okay. It really depends on the person. And then we have other people, they walk in, you know, within 24 hours, they're hitting the ground running, going looking for places to live with resources that we provide, going and looking for jobs, or going to another location in their current job. It just really depends where a person's at. So I just want people who are listening to this to understand that you make the choices when you come to Hubbard House. You make the choices of what you want for your future. We're not here to tell you what to do or how to do it. And if you choose to not get a divorce, that's fine. I mean, that is not our choice. If you choose to go back to the abuser, that is your choice. We will talk with you about safety things you can do while you're living with the abuser. And then we're always here for you if you decide that you need to leave again. It really is their choice. and their call for what they want to do for their lives. And I think that's important, because sometimes when people come into shelter or service organizations, they sometimes think they're going to tell me, they're going to make me do X, Y, Z, and we're really not about making people do stuff. We're here about, this is what we have for you. You choose what's best for your life. And as they seek guidance, we give that guidance. We give that support. We walk that path with them.
Right. And I think that's really comforting to hear, because like you just reiterated so many times, people who are in these terrible relationships feel like it's going to get even worse if they call these people, because then that's just another form of control in their mind. But,
right.
But you're saying, no, we just have resources and we're here to help. We're not controlling in any way, but we're presenting something. If you want it, then take it.
Right. Exactly.
And Gail, I had the opportunity to sit in on the press conference that the Hubbard House did, I think it was about a week and a half ago. And everybody was giving some data comparing 2020 to 2019 abuse cases and just things that have popped up over the past year that are different than last year. Can you kind of unravel the difference that we've faced this year, especially with COVID, and how that's played a role in abuse?
It definitely has played a role with abuse. We have seen law enforcement report that they've seen a 5% increase in domestic violence calls this year. We also have seen a 5% increase in calls to our hotline related to domestic violence. And if you think about it, when COVID hit, you know, we first had somewhat of a lockdown where people were staying in their homes. And what that means to victims of domestic violence is now they're quarantined or isolated in their home with the abuser. The abuser has greater access over longer periods of time with their victim. But conversely, the victim is not going out where they can get help or get support from other people. They are now locked in this home, so to speak, with the abuser without the normal resources that they would have. And when this first started, JSO actually was seeing an even greater increase, but we were seeing a decrease in the hotline. And that made sense, because a person, if they are now isolated in the home with the abuser can hear their telephone calls.
Mm.
So what we did was, okay, we need to provide another outlet for survivors in case they can't verbally talk on the phone. So we developed a 24-hour text line so a person could text us for help if they didn't feel it was safe enough to call us for help. And for some people, they think texting might be more dangerous, so they'll call us. So we wanted to provide options, and this allowed just another point of access for survivors to get help with us. Because what we know from the pandemic is those normal times when survivors go out and get help, it might be, I'm going to go run to the store and get some food. And they go to the store, but they pull over and they call us. Or they go to work and they're seeing their friends face to face, and friends are asking them questions like, how'd you get that bruise? You seem kind of upset today. And so they talk to their friends, and the friends work with management to get the person help. Well, all those things changed when we began isolating and working at home. All those regular avenues of getting help closed off to survivors while abusers were there all the time doing what they do, which is abuse and threaten and control victims. So it's not unexpected, but it is scary because we know that even today, even though different states have gone to different phases of opening out, people are being very judicious and careful about where they go compared to how we used to do it. And so there still are those lack of readily available resources, and people still are working from home. So you're talking about people still being confined together, whereas a year ago they may not have been so confined. So it's just important to realize that you as a family member or a friend, if you have a suspicion that a person might be in an abusive relationship, you know, there are things you can do. If you can talk to them safely, and usually you talk to people by asking them questions that they can answer yes or no, so that the person sitting by them can't hear the actual conversation. Or if you know somebody as a Facebook friend and you think they might be in an abusive relationship, I wouldn't call them out on Facebook about that, but just on your own feed, post the Hubbard House hotline or other domestic violence hotline. If they're your friend, they'll see it. And so you'll be able to get that information out. So it's just different ways of being very strategic to reach out to help people that are trapped in situations at an even greater level than we were even a year ago.
One thing that one of the women from the press conference said was, if you suspect something, make a connection. And this doesn't mean a typical, hey, I'm going to do a rescue run and pick you up out of your house and drop you off at the Hubbard house. But ask these questions and form a friendship so you do have that in to say, hey, I think you need help and I have this place that can help you.
Exactly. Don't be afraid to breed the conversation up. If the person denies it, then they deny it. And if they deny it, but it's true, don't take offense to that, because denying it is a way of keeping them safe. They may be denying it because they've been told, if you tell anybody, I'll kill you, I'll kill the kids, I'll kill your mother, I'll kill your father. So they may deny it. But just know, you asking the question, you being a friend and reaching out and saying, whatever, I'm here for you if you ever need to talk. I am somebody that you can reach out to no matter what time. Call me, text me, let me know you're okay. Because when they are ready to make a move, they're going to go to those people that reached out to them rather than somebody that never said anything. So you make an excellent point. Making those connections, keeping those connections with our family and friends is so important, not only because of the situation we find all of ourselves in, being isolated, but with survivors, that isolation turns into physical injury and possible death. So that's even more important.
It's obvious that the Hubbard House works hard and does good year-round, but like I mentioned before, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So I want to know, how is the Hubbard House bringing awareness to what's happening in people's everyday life?
Well, what we're doing this year that we've never done before, and it's because of COVID, is we are having a virtual awareness breakfast. It's at 8 o'clock. It's a Facebook Live event. And during that event, you will be able to hear stories from survivors, just amazing stories of courage and hope, and how people were able to get out of their abusive relationships and where they are today, which is just so inspiring. And during that live event, awareness, and it's free. If a person goes to hubbardhouse.org/breakfast, you can register and you'll get the link to the Facebook Live event. And it's free because of generous sponsors. You'll be able to hear these amazing stories, and you'll also be able to learn about how people can get help. So that in itself brings incredible awareness when you actually see somebody who has walked that journey and is now on the other side of abuse. That really does give a lot of hope, not only to survivors, but also gives the hopes of family and friends and just community members to see how helping Hubbard House and helping survivors makes a huge difference in that person's life, in their children's lives, and for generations to come, because now that family is not embedded in violence. They're embedded in freedom and hope, and that's just a different path that whole family takes from here on out. So that's a way that we're bringing awareness. We're also doing a lot of different media spots. We're doing community education, virtual community education with people to talk to them about what's going on as far as services that are available. And of course, we continue to provide services. We want people to know that we never closed during the pandemic. The shelter was always open, and our outreach services did close for about a week or two. Then we opened them back up, and we're doing in-person and virtual meetings with people through our outreach program. So we are here for people 24/7, 365 days out of the year, and we're just making that awareness greater during Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
And Gail, on my end, when I got to sit in on the press conference, someone actually shared their survivor story, and that's the first time I've ever heard a story like that. So just bringing that awareness to me opened my eyes, and it was incredible. Just a very quick rundown was, she was in an abusive relationship for I think 20 or 21 years,
right. Mm-hmm.
And you think, okay, well, this is just my life. I've been in it this long. This is how I have to live from now on. But it was so encouraging to hear how the Hubbard House 20 years ago picked her up from that and helped her create this new life where she's remarried and such a pure and beautiful atmosphere. And it just goes to show that it's never too late. And the Hubbard House is there through it all. So just bringing awareness to me, and now I get the opportunity to share what I learned to other people.
Right, and the beauty of that story, too, is it was a friend who told her about Hubbard House.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And that was a connection that had that friend not been there to help her, you know, who knows how her life would have turned out.
And so just little ways of placing ourselves in these different resources that you're providing. But how else can the community come behind you, stand behind you, support you, and bring awareness during October as well?
They can do many things. I talked about it. Post on your own social media information about our website. We have a Facebook presence, and you can always share our posts there. We have a lot of good information, and all it takes is a couple clicks of the button, and you can share it with your entire media. Share about this awareness breakfast, because you are going to hear amazing stories from survivors, and it just gets the message out. We also, if you go to hubbardhouse.org, you'll find other opportunities for us to provide education, a speaker at with your group. Now, it may be a Zoom, because you know we're still trying to be very conscientious about the virus and looking at seeing how that happens. But we have been able to do that through Zoom pretty effectively. And then also we have some volunteer opportunities. We're being very careful about that as well. And then as we move into the holidays in November and December, we have opportunities for the community to provide toys for our holiday store, to adopt a family, to help provide a Thanksgiving meal for people in shelter and for some of our people in outreach. And then, of course, always we welcome donations to Hubbard House, because we can't do what we do without the generous financial support of the community. And every penny, every dime helps a survivor lead that life free of violence.
Gail, what's a good website or a Facebook contact where we can get more involved and learn more and give more?
If you go to hubbardhouse.org, and then that will has links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our Instagram, all those social media areas, all you have to remember is hubbardhouse.org, and then when you go on that website, you will find a lot of information.
Well, Gail, thank you so much for being such a huge part of our community and for being such a great neighbor and serving us so well.
Thank you for bringing this message. You are going to save lives because you're creating this awareness, and I really, truly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week. And if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at jacksonville.radio.